French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Summertime is in full force here in the Great Plains. I think we are all desperate for some heat relief, but we're not going to let that weather keep us down. We're going to talk some fishing today. I've got my co-host Rob McDonald here with me and our very own Great Plains Outdoors Grandpa Fish. And we have a special guest with us, Mike McClellan, and he's going to be talking about all things walleye with us today. Guys, how are you doing today? Good to see you all.
Yeah, it's a little warm out there, Brittany, like you mentioned. Yes. I think we're in the dog days of summer. Mike, where are you at in the world right now?
I'm in Pierce, South Dakota.
Okay. Are you guys in this?
Central South Dakota.
Are you in this same kind of heat wave, 100 degrees plus, that we've been having down here in Kansas?
We are.
Pretty rough. We're ready for a cool day.
Yeah, seems to be a little hotter once you get on the water.
yeah, exactly. You better get an umbrella out there or something, I'll tell you. I've been fishing at night, so that's been some relief. We fish under lights, under floating lights. We hook them up to a battery and put a halogen light out on the water and a styrofoam encasement, and it's been good. Yeah, we've been catching a lot of nice crappies. So
cool. You know, I feel like we need to formally introduce our guest, Mike McClellan. But you know, we've got our own angling guru, Brent Frazee, also known as our Grandpa Fish. And so I think I'll let Brent do those honors of introducing Mike for us.
Hey, that's great. Mike and I go way back. I mean, when we were both young boys, I tell you, it's been almost that long. I remember the first time I met Mike, and I'd heard so much about him. I mean, this guy is some people, some magazine writers and everything have called him the greatest walleye fisherman in this day and age. I mean, Mike, and I'd heard so much about Mike, I went to a media day. I don't even know if you remember this, Mike, but I went to a media day, and I think it was in South Dakota. And I fished from the back of the boat with Mike and got to see how this guy operated. And by the end of the day, I was talking to some other writers, and we called Mike the Eraser, because when a walleye would show up on the screen, or just a mark on the screen, Mike would erase that fish from the screen. He would catch that fish. I had never seen anything like that. That's when electronics were still pretty new. I mean, I can't even remember, Mike, back in those days what you were using. I mean, I don't think it was a paper graph. It was, I think it was... Pardon me?
Just a flasher.
Okay. But it was amazing that I got to watch Mike at work like this. So I just, I'm really excited to have Mike on the show today. Wanted to talk to somebody about walleye fishing, and we're going to be talking to the best when we talk to Mike a little bit later on. Mike is a top professional walleye fisherman. He lives in Pierce, South Dakota. He's proven himself with 23 top walleye tournament wins, 19 second place finishes, and 48 other top 10 places. He's the all-time leading money winner in competitive walleye fishing. I don't believe he doesn't fish as many tournaments as he used to, but the guy is still extremely active. He guides several times a week. lot of people have seen his books. He's authored several books, including How to Win the Walleye Game, Walleyes in Shallow Water, Frank Bates, Troubleshooting, Bank Fishing Secrets, and Crankbait Trolling Depth Guide. So this guy is, he's Mr. Walleye. And Mike, I'm happy to have you on the show with us.
Happy to be here.
It's good to see you. Great.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for joining us. I'm curious. You know, I've caught approximately one walleye in my entire life, and I'm very proud of it. And so I want to know your why. Why walleye? How did you get into this?
Well, when you live in the Midwest, you'll get about two choices. It's either bass or it's either walleyes. And walleyes interested me probably more because a lot of it was locating the fish and then catching the fish without a lot of visual aids other than electronics.
Yep.
Not like bass fishing where you go find the lily pads or you find the rushes or the cover and stuff. This is just basically all underwater.
Gotcha. And it's a game, isn't it, Mike? It's a game to figure them out. Well,
it's very interesting because when the first walleye circus developed, most of what we knew about walleye fishing was just a myth and guessing. And when you get all these quality of fishermen fishing, they'll come up with some of the real deals. You know, this is what the walleyes really do. This is where they are, you know. It destroyed a lot of the old theories on walleyes, how they just bit at night and they were always in deep water. Yeah, we found out they bit all day long and are in very shallow water in some cases.
Well, yeah. Hey, Mike, we're gonna go into this fishing report on the Great Plains, and I'm saving the Dakotas for the last of the report so that you can chime in on what you're seeing in the Dakotas right now and kind of give us an idea of, you know, what we can expect here coming into fall. So anyway, let's get started. I'm going to just hit on some highlights from each of the states. Missouri has some interesting things going on right now. It has been an outstanding year for trophy trout at Lake Tanicomo. Lily's Landing Resort in Branson, they have reported three consecutive months of 100 trophy trout caught and released. That's quite a deal there. Of interest, one thing that caught my eye in talking to the people down at Lily's. They had one 24-inch brown trout, which was caught at night in early July. A week later, the same guide reported the same trout was caught by another fisherman. Just a week later. So much for the myth about all fish, once they get stung, they don't bite again or something like this. This was 1 week, and they could, you say, how do they know it's the same fish? It had some pretty unique markings and everything. So that's going on down there. I mean, Lake Tanicomo, excellent right now, even in the heat of the summer. And the nice thing is that water is always cold down there. So you can dip your feet in when you're fishing and you can cool off. Another interesting thing going on, the walleye stocking programs by the Missouri Department of Conservation is really paying off at several Ozarks reservoirs. Guides at Table Rock Lake are finding walleyes mixed in with a spotted bass on fishing deep structure, and they're catching some nice size fish. I mean, like some six pound walleyes have been reported caught, and They're posting the pictures on Facebook and stuff. So that's a pretty neat deal, because Table Rock, you know, used to be that, you know, it wasn't, it's better known for bass, but walleyes are coming on at Table Rock, and they say that they say now that you can actually target them. Another thing is another place where they're having some good walleye fishing, of all places, Truman Lake. Truman is known for bass and crappie fishing and some big catfish, but they have a good walleye population now, and people are actually targeting walleyes. So that's kind of a neat deal too. Just real briefly, another thing going on in Missouri, some huge blue cats are being caught on the Missouri River at night, and during the day on the Mississippi River near Cape Girardeau. I mean, they're catching some huge fish. So this is kind of the time of the year for those blue cats. They're coming off the spawn. They're hungry. And really, this heat isn't affecting them that much. In Kansas, some big wipers are being caught on topwater lures, such as like ocean-type chug bugs, at dawn and dusk at Milford Lake. And if you've ever been out fishing for those wipers, it is a blast. I mean, just all of a sudden, the surface will just start tearing up, and you throw a topwater into the middle of all that commotion. And I've had times when they'll knock that lure straight up into the air and miss it. And once it lands, they'll pounce on it. It's really a fun deal. It really is. It's also been a good year at Tuttle Creek near Manhattan, Kansas. Crappie population is in real good shape, good numbers, and good population of big fish. Lake also has some good-sized channel cat, so that's a place to keep in mind. And Pomona has produced some good channel cat fishing this summer. A lot of fish in the 2 to 4 pound range, some bigger. So they've always been known for their channel cat, but they are really hitting this year at Pomona. In Iowa, Mississippi River, some fun things going on there. Northern pike have been good on spoons near the mouths of creeks. Bass are good in the top in the backwaters. Big bluegills are also good in the sloughs and the backwaters. And if you're a drum fisherman like Rob is, Rob has pictures of big drum in his bedroom. He dreams about them.
That's right.
they are catching some really big drum. So the best fishing has been in Pool 9, and that's right along, I believe that's right along the Wisconsin border. So Des Moines River, channel catfish are good in dip bait and cut bait. So some things going on there. Also on Spirit Lake, they're catching big bluegills on worms and crickets. In Nebraska, Lake McConaughey, which is really coming on as a big walleye destination. They are catching some big walleyes. Of course, they're not as active as they were in the spring, but they're still catching some big walleyes on trolling nightcrawler harnesses or crankbaits on the south side. Fish are suspended above the flooded timber. So Merritt Reservoir near Valentine, Nebraska, also producing some pretty fair walleye fishing for people trolling. And a few big muskies have been reported too along the deep weed edges. And then there are the Sandhill Lakes. They've produced some good bass and bluegill fishing early and late. The only thing with those Sandhill Lakes, they've been affected by the drought. So sometimes it's hard to launch a boat at some of those lakes. But even people fishing off the shore shore if you get out early and late. They have been good. Now we're going to kick it over to Mike, and he's going to tell us what's going on. First of all, let's say North Dakota. Mike, what are you hearing up there?
North Dakota, well, North Dakota is good right now. What you really have to be concerned with if you're fishing walleyes is all these reservoirs and all these natural lakes go up and down. They turn over about every 5 years from peaking to bottom. So communications with these lakes and the fishermen on it is the key, because walleyes aren't hard to catch. They're just hard to find. But right now, North Dakota's kind of on the upswing, probably maybe peaking next year for big fish. Oahe's big fish on Lake Oahe, they're peaking now. I mean, we're getting a lot of those 8 to 12 pound fish. So,
wow.
And your other reservoirs is down south. If you head down towards your neck of the woods, we got Lake Sharp and Francis Case. They have some big fish, but they're really the walleye factories. They really produce good year classes of fish every year in that 2 to 3 pound area.
Now, that's South Dakota, right? Lake Sharp?
We're still in South Dakota, yeah.
Okay.
But we got North Dakota, that's Sakakawea. That's what's going on there. And you go on up into Montana and you get to Fort Peck. And Fort Peck has an outstanding fishery for sawguy in that 6 to 8 pound range. And and it's probably the least fishing of all the reservoirs. I mean, but the lodging is almost impossible. There's one place on the whole reservoir.
Oh, geez. Better get your reservations early, man.
Yeah.
Well, where have you been guiding, Mike? Or maybe you don't want to disclose your honey holes, but you've been quite a bit of guiding even here on the
Right now I'm on the river below the dam on Lake Oahe. And that fishery's pretty good for numbers of those fish in the 1.5 to 2 pound class. But I'll start out in North Dakota early. That'll be mid-April. And then by June, I'm over on Big Stone Lake. I spend about 3 weeks over there and do a lot of pan fishing. I mean, the bluegills are as big as a dinner plate. And the fun part is you can watch them. The water's so clear, you can watch them bite and stuff. But do a lot of family guiding over there. It's a lot of fun. Matter of fact, I take my own grandkid with me.
Nice.
He's go from there to some of the other lakes in eastern South Dakota and in those glacial lakes there. And I actually go wherever the fish are biting, where the fishing reports are.
Huh.
And every place has a fishing report. If you just tune into the local radio station, you'll get it, you know.
Yeah.
Or now, call any of the resorts.
Now, you were telling me, you know, you're finding some good walleye fishing on some of the smaller lakes in South Dakota that don't get as much fishing pressure as some of the big ones. Go into that a little bit.
Well, about in 1990, our water table in eastern Dakotas really came up, and it flooded a lot of the old lake beds that haven't had water in them for 100 years. And these lakes just expanded. And Devil's Lake in North Dakota also was in the same situation, where these lakes got twice and three times as large and spread out. Once they spread out into all this vegetation and stuff, the spawn very successful and the fisheries just exploded. They're all peak at a different time, but again, it's back to communications. I can think of 24 of them east that one's good 1 year and one's good, you know, the next year, but it's really hard to say. I mean, it's hit and miss. And I do my guiding accordingly. I'll know what lake to go to, and I have hookups with the resorts at most all of them. There's a half a dozen that I'll be on the calendar to fish. Mm-hmm. So I find I'm way more successful if I go where the fish are biting.
Yeah, amen. Amen.
I'm tired of trying to make them bite.
Mike, is it even in this heat, are you fishing during the day and still catching walleyes? Or?
Yeah, I only fish during the day. So, but right now we're drifting the river just below pier with bottom bouncers and spinners along the bluffs or over on the flats, and we'll catch, I don't know, 30, 40 fish a day.
Mm, nice.
So
Mike, I'm curious, what's your favorite time of year to fish? You know, we were in this heat wave now. We were talking about that when we kicked the episode off. But if you had your choice, your favorite time of year to fish for walleyes, what time of year is that, and why do you pick that time of year?
Well, you know, I fish when I have to fish. I never go fishing just to go fish. And I found that out when I retired from the circuit. I thought, well, I was so tired of going to places where there wasn't any fish, where they'd hold these tournaments. And I thought, well, I'm done. I'm just going to fish when I want to fish, where the fish are biting. The thing I didn't know was didn't want to fish. I always had to fish. I had to go every day, whether it was windy, rainy, or whatever. And so I went for a couple of years without hardly fishing at all. And that's when I started guiding again, because then I was committed and I had to go. Once I have to go, I like it regardless of the weather, regardless of the time of the year. I mean, we can put clothes on and we can get warmed up in the wintertime. But it doesn't make much difference to me at all what the weather is. Or as far as my clients go, yeah, I like to see a little nicer weather, but. Usually, if they want to book early, they're expecting to be a little chilly or a little wet.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you kind of mentioned earlier, and I'm curious, you mentioned fishing reports. And I know those are very much available out there. And our own Grandpa Fish here, Brent, does a fishing report for us every season. Where do you like to go to find those fishing reports? If you're a newbie out there listening to this podcast, this might be a good way for some of you to, you know, start fishing some areas you don't normally fish because of these reports.
Well, you can, in the Dakotas and Montana and Wyoming, the state puts out a fishing report weekly. That's very generic and, you know, nothing pinpoint, but to give you an idea, but my contacts have been built starting about the time I met Brent 40 years ago. And so it's just, I mean, just different resorts on different lakes, and you can call up any of them, and you won't always get the best information, but you will know who not to call next year.
That's good advice. That really is, you know.
I think that.
Yeah, there's something to be said about building up a Rolodex of contacts, right? Like, we've worked really hard for a long time to build up yours, to figure out where those reports are best coming from. So that's good advice.
Well, Mike, go into compare the walleye fishing years ago and how it is today. I mean, was it a lot better back in the day?
Well, as these new fisheries was discovered, you would see Oahe made a peak at a certain time, and then it's North Dakota. And like I say, they all come bounce up and down. And you just have to keep in contact to know when it's good, when they're not good. But I hate to say it, but you just got to build up this contact list if you do a lot of fishing.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that do a lot of fishing already have these contacts, and that's what they depend on.
Sure. Sure.
I
mean,
I guess the best way is to, what you find out first is where the fish ain't biting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they'll have plenty of rooms at the resorts. They'll have lots of rooms.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, that makes me think about Brittany. And Brent and I met earlier this summer. It was kind of late spring, early summer at Milford. And, you know, we're in this drought situation, and there hadn't been a lot of runoff. And the lake was really clear because of that. And we had a time that we were going to go meet and had a guide lined out to take us out. Super low pressure. You know, it was just sort of a fun outing. So we weren't too worked up about the fish numbers really. But when I pulled in to the boat ramp, which is one of the more busy boat ramps at Milford, which is the largest reservoir in the state of Kansas, and there was like three other vehicles at the whole parking lot. And I thought, man, this is, I don't know what's going on here. I've never seen in that time of year, seen that boat ramp so desolate. And we quickly found out when we got on the water and struggled to catch anything but a 6 or 8 inch largemouth bass. I think Brittany finally caught a nice crappie and maybe Brent caught one too. I don't think I caught a fish that whole day, but yeah. Just your point there about, you know, check with the bait shops and the resorts and follow the fishing report. And if there's a lot of rooms at the hotel or the campgrounds are all open, then there's something going on there.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, Mike, you were telling me when I talked to you earlier, you know, some of the questions you get about walleye fishing, and you were saying there's a lot of misconceptions about walleye fishing. Maybe go into some of those misconceptions.
Well, I wrote a book that answered the 50 most often asked questions about walleye fishing, which I knew those 50 well, because I don't know, I might have done 500, 600, 700 seminars and always took questions afterwards. I think that's where I met you first, was at the Kansas City Sports Show, Brett.
Yeah.
So, so I answered those questions, and it was quite a process, because I would jot a question down after a seminar. Well, then as I was driving back and forth to tournaments and back and forth to sports shows, I'd answer those questions, and I'd put those all into one book. So that's a very interesting book. And it just about every question you can come up with is answered, right or wrong. It's still answered. And until proven wrong, I guess it's right. So, but you know, what I found was interesting, you're talking about the Missouri walleye stocking program. Back in the late 80s, that was just getting started. And we was just trying to convince Missouri into really growing that fishery. And so I'm pretty excited. I haven't been there for 20 years down in that area fishing, but it's good to hear that it's coming along well.
What are some of the myths about walleye fishing that you address?
Just about anything that you think is true.
Okay, let me give you one.
I'll give you some examples.
Okay.
Now, I'll bet you have a favorite color for walleye fishing.
Chartreuse.
Chartreuse or orange, or you'll have a favorite color. And I'll guarantee you, you're going to catch more fish on that color than any other color. You know why? It's the only color you use.
Yeah.
And probably the biggest thing the biggest kick I get out of walleye fishing is, you know, anytime you give, I never give fish credit for thinking. They react to an action. They don't pick, they don't choose. Anytime you give fish credit for thinking, making a decision or making a choice, only one thing happens. You're going to buy something. That's the only thing that's going to happen. You're just going to buy something because they don't think. So an action creates a reaction. And anytime you give them credit for making decisions or choosing is only going to, you might say, muddy the water. Just an action creates a reaction. What works for you, color-wise and anything else.
Well, you know, one of the things we were talking about and that you're known for, people think you have to go out, other than when they're spawning, that you have to go out deep and get on deep structure or whatever to catch walleyes. But you've been famous for disproving that they will bite in shallow water. Go into that.
Well, it's pretty simple. Again, you don't want to give them too much credit. They're going to go where the food is. And once once these bait fish and stuff get done with the spawn, the food is shallow. And so your electronics, once you hit 10 foot in depth, when you get shallower than that, your electronics are useless. Your cone angles are so small, that's got to physically be fished. Mm-hmm. So people overlook that, particularly with the electronics they got now. They overlook that shallow water because your cone angle is so small, they can't see much. So you have to physically fish it. And the fish are going to be where the food is. If all your bait is suspended like it is on Oahu now, all those big fish are coming from 30 to 40 foot suspended over 100 feet of water. And wow. These guys are doing the live scopes. They'll pull into a point and they'll shine the deep water side of it and pick up these fish suspended. Then they'll throw at them till that fish bites. So that's where they're getting these 8, 10, 12 pound fish from. But that's a whole different story than what I've ever done. You know, is fish those suspended fish in that open water like that. But things change with electronics and everything else, as you know.
Yeah. Do you use LiveScope?
You know, I have one. I'll take it out. Me and my grandson will mess around with it. But it's not a technique you'd use to guide. So okay. Guide, you know, you don't assume people have a lot of fishing talent. Bottom bouncer and a spinner and a crawler. That's the number one way to catch walleyes anywhere. And It keeps track of the bottom for you, presents a bait a foot off the bottom, and does everything right for you.
Okay, interesting. So how do you know where to start off? I mean, do you use your electronics to find the bait fish and then start fishing there, or maybe go into a scenario of like a guide trip?
Well, you know, they have a big tournament in Fond du Lac called the Mercury National. There's 600 entries in it a year. And everybody was trolling open water, you know. But I found those fish in 2 foot of water right next to the shoreline. To me, right where they should have been. And basically, it was just shoreline that had a little ledge on it and 2 feet of water and pitching a jig. But, you know, after the tournament, I told everybody exactly how I want it and where I want it. And I went back the next year, and they let me do it again. They didn't believe me the first year.
Wow. So
I won it 2 years in a row. And the interesting part about this, just kind of a little thing, that after that second tournament, Bob Props and I, who's a very great fisherman, I learned a lot from Bob. But we're sitting there having breakfast, getting ready to leave town, and these four old boys were sitting at the table beside us, and they were talking. And the one says, "Hey, did you hear they got that guy from South Dakota? They caught his mom. She works in a fish market in Neenah, Wisconsin, and she was giving him his fish on the dock. He's in jail as we speak."
Oh, jeez.
I'm having breakfast right beside him.
That's funny. That's funny. Oh, that's interesting. Rob, you were talking about some of this about locating walleyes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big walleye angler. I like to go. And if a friend of mine that is known for walleye fishing or has some experience, I definitely want to go with them, you know. And interestingly enough, again, Brittany and Brent and I were together at Wilson Lake in Kansas earlier this year, in a lake that's known in Kansas for walleye fishing. And we had guides there. We had a riders conference, and we had guides there that took us out. And Brittany did catch a trophy walleye. It was a fantastic fish. But I think between the three of us, that was the only walleye boated all day. And so there was some smallmouth that were caught and things like that. And so, I guess I've always struggled with that. You know, I can generally find crappies. I can generally find some catfish. You know, you were talking, Mike, when we started the podcast about bass fishing, you know, go to the lily pads or the rushes or you know, the rocks, you know, you can find those fish. But walleye have always sort of been this myth of trying to locate them, and you're the master at that. So I'm just curious, like, let's say, you know, here we are in August. If somebody was going to try to get out between now and, I don't know, October, where would you start? You know, you said where the bait is. So, the bait being, you know, we're fishing with crawlers. So is the bait crawlers, or is the bait the shad? Is it, you know, what are we really looking for?
Well, I've fished, I think all of those Kansas reservoirs you mentioned, and they really don't have a big concentration of fish. So they are a little harder to find there than if you go to someplace like Pier or Devil's Lake, that's just loaded with fish, you know. But no, I would start the same way I start every body of water. I fish shallow. It has to physically be fished. So you just fish the wind. Go to the windy side. You can throw a jig and a crawler, or you can throw a crankbait. But you really got to look at all those spots, the points. Any flooded vegetation, as reservoirs come up, the fish are going to be in them. I don't care what time of year it is. Hmm. The walleye, if it's the end of August, the walleyes are going to be in 2 foot of water, right in the flooded vegetation, and in the green weeds that flooded. So there's some visual aids in that respect to wind and flooded vegetation and stuff. But a fish the windy side, those fish will be shallow on the windy side. You have a hard time with walleyes in shallow water on the calm side of the lake in calm water, because fish operate off of a lateral line. They don't see things like we see them or taste things. Or lateral line tells them everything that goes on around them. Wherever something moves water, they feel that. And so it's water displacement. You get in the calm water, it's not that there's not walleyes there. It's the fact that you've got this 18, 20 foot boat that's displacing a lot of water as it comes towards them. They don't know that's a boat, but they do know it's big enough to eat them. And those fish will be out of there. Okay. You get the wind and the waves, you really cover up that water displacement and okay. Makes them fish more accessible, more aggressive.
Very, very interesting. That's good advice. Mike, as a creature, I mean, is the walleye, is it an ambush feeder, or is it like an open water, more of an open water feeder, more of a roamer?
It doesn't make any difference to it whatsoever. It's not what I'd call an ambush. It's an opportunist is what it is.
Okay.
Now, when these fish will get on that windy side of the lake and they'll get in that shallower water, well, it's like going in the dark for them. They're operating off the lateral line. And the larger the fish, the better lateral line he's going to have, the more developed. So he's got a big advantage over bait fish as far as knowing they're there and he doesn't know they're there. So that's one of the keys. They're going to go where the food is. If the food's all suspended, that's where they're going to be. Okay. If you've got a smelt forage base or whatever, if it's a shallow water forage base, like a perch or something, they're going to be in the shallow water. But they'll be where the food is. And that's an important thing to consider when you're looking at your electronics, is understand what bait fish look like, because it's going to be relevant. If you've got, you'll go to one side of the lake and you don't see any bait fish, any clouds or nothing, there won't be any fish there either. But if you find the bait fish, and you usually find the walleyes, they don't care whether they're suspended or whether they're in the weeds or whatever, they get close enough. If it's the right size and the right water displacement, they suck it in. And if they can swallow it, they will. If they can't, they'll spit it back out. It's not like they're waiting for a school of Rapala lures to come by because they were good yesterday. But they don't know what they're eating.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd never eat a spinner and a night crawler if they knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting. You know, I think about, you know, growing up fishing farm ponds in the Midwest here, and you'd see like a piece of structure, like a down tree laid off in the lake. And, you know, you'd work to try to get your, you know, a rubber worm or, you know, a jig, a curly tail jig or something past the shadow side of that structure, because you knew there was going to be a largemouth bass just holed up in that shadow waiting for something to come by and then jump out and ambush it, you know. But the type of fishing that you're talking about is very different from that, right?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. It's just that you're given that bass credit for thinking and making a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how that works.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in the shade because he doesn't like being in the sun. It's hard on him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the shade. And if he's in the shade, and a small fish wants to get in that shade too. So it just happens they both like the shade. So it's the shade more than anything.
Right.
Just like fishing dirty water for walleyes, you know, that's, they don't need to see. They don't, they're operating off their lateral line, not their eyesight. And bass is a little different. He doesn't have near as wide or broad as a lateral line as a walleye has. And so he probably does depend on sight a lot more. And definitely visual. Like, you don't catch many walleyes on topwater baits. That really don't register with them. But it does with the bass. So, and that would be, fish can't look down. All mm-hmm. fish look up. And so he's looking up. He'll see that. So clear water, bass, shade is very important to him. To a walleye, they'd just soon be in the dirtier water.
Yeah. Interesting.
Do big fish, big walleyes act any differently than small walleyes? I mean, will a big fish be in feeding with a school of smaller walleyes, or do they school by size, or are big ones more isolated? Or what's your opinion on that?
Well, I know for a fact that big walleyes will eat little walleyes. They don't know if it's their cousin or their uncle, or if it's even related or the same species. If it's the right size, they're going to eat it. I've cleaned a lot of walleyes that had young of the year walleyes in them, you know.
Interesting.
But, you know, kind of a forage base might depend on that. You get a, like what's going on in Lake Oahe right now is we've got a lot of, they stock it with tulabies, a lake herring is what it is. And anyway, that changed the whole system here and the fish too, because those are all suspending fish. So it suspended a lot of our fishery. And those fish they're eating are anywhere from 6 to 16 inches long. And so it isn't the size, it's just the, and so you'll find them over 150 foot of water suspended in 40, 50 foot. The salmon fishermen are catching a lot of the big walleyes.
Oh, wow.
They just kind of go where they, you know, if there's some place and there's food there, they'll stay there. You know, that's all they do is look for something to eat all the time.
Okay. So if the food moves, they'll move then, huh?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I've got two young boys at home, and, you know, wherever the food is, if there's a pizza, I mean, they're going to stay there till it's gone. So I could identify with what you're Absolutely. Talking about there, Mike.
Absolutely. They'll probably hang around the icebox too, huh?
That's right.
I love it. Well, Brittany was asking earlier, for our listeners, say if they want to plan a walleye trip, and I realize what you say, you know, that you have to talk to resorts and see if the fish are hitting. But in general, what are some towns that have good facilities, like they have good motels and restaurants and things like that? I know Pier is one of them that is a popular destination for walleye fishermen. What are some other places that you would recommend that have good facilities?
Well, if you go to, let's start up in Montana, Fort Peck, that there's only one place up there, that's Hill Creek. So you've got one resort on that whole reservoir. Wow. It's on the south side of the lake, so that's that one. And then you get up to Sakakawea, and then you got Newtown. Newtown's got several. It doesn't have many. I don't know if it's got any resorts on the lake. It in the Van Hook arm, but you've got several towns that are on that lake there. So there's plenty of places to stay. You got motels and stuff. A lot of these lakes don't have motels or nothing. But on Oahu, you got Pier. Pier's got, you've probably been to Pier, haven't you, Brent?
Yeah, a lot of places
to stay. And you get up to Mobridge, that's 100 miles north, and it's got a lot of places to stay. Or down to Chamberlain, it's got a lot of places to stay. So Lake Oahu and Lake Sharp are really accessible.
And okay.
That fishery goes 12 months a year.
Oh, and wow.
I can't even say it has a better time. I mean, it's a better fish. It's nicer fishing in the spring than it is midsummer and 100 degrees, or in the winter when it's 20 degrees. But the fishery goes all year. Okay. The fish sizes vary. I mean, we'll get up to where our average fish is 3.5 pounds on Lake Sharp. And then 3 years later, you're looking at 12-inch fish. And that goes with all the reservoirs on the system. They peak and they go down, peak and valley. So you want to keep up with them and what's going on with them. But
what's the hottest walleye lakes right now? You might have mentioned this earlier, but what, you know, say if some of our Kansas listeners want to plan a vacation, say to South Dakota, what would you suggest for, you know, decent sized fish?
Well, if it was April or May, I would definitely go to the eastern lakes, the glacial lakes. Okay. And Bitter, Enemy Swim, Big Stone, any of those, they all have good spring fisheries. Okay. But it's kind of spring and early summer only, then they could really flatten out. But I don't know. I know that next year I'll be at Big Stone Lake for about 3 weeks into May and June. And I'll go from there over to Bitter Lake and Enemy Swim, which is about 100 miles west of there. I'll end up back here at the reservoirs about the end of June. Then I'll go to North Dakota, first 2 weeks of July, up to the Van Hook Arm. That's kind of a big fish fishery there. And then I'll come back down here and just tick on the river the rest of the year.
Oh, nice. And by river, you're talking about the Missouri River.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, which it's almost laughable because the difference in the Missouri River up where you are and where
my brother, he races kayaks. He's in a kayak race right now today.
Yeah.
Going from Kansas City to St. Louis.
Okay, yeah.
And their weather has just been horrible. They said they capsized about 10 of them kayaks yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And he's traveling. I talked to him this morning. He's traveling at 4.1 miles an hour, which is 3 miles an hour less than normal because of the wind blowing upstream and the current's down this year.
Yeah.
So what's going to take him 50 hours, he says he'll be lucky to be there in 70.
Oh, jeez.
Not to mention it's 105 degrees today. Goodness.
Yeah. Oh, the things people do for fun, I tell you.
Yeah.
Kind of like chasing those walleye around, huh?
Yeah, I like it. You got me excited about walleye fishing, Mike. I tell you, it's that's something. And I guess another misconception is that people think you can't catch walleyes in the heat of the summer. That the walleye fishing shuts off. But like you've said, you can catch them.
Well, they don't quit eating. They don't quit eating because it's summertime.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just have to go to a different restaurant. Maybe all those shallow bait fish ain't up in that shallow water no more.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, anything else, panel? Have we pretty much covered it all, or?
I don't know. It changes so fast. I don't know if you'll ever get it all covered.
Right. I'm curious, Mike, you know, where you live and your passion there, and you're talking about some of those fisheries are 12 months a year. Do you do any fishing on the ice for walleye, or is it just strictly open water stuff for you?
Nope. I took a message from nature when that lake froze up. It's time to quit fishing.
Okay.
Yeah.
My grandkid, he'll go, I live right on the river here, and he'll go out here on these canals I live in and drill holes, and he's cut three or four northerns over 25 pounds out of it.
Wow.
But I'll watch his tickles out my window. That's my ice fishing.
Okay. I hear you. Well, I'm looking at time. Should we go into the lightning round?
Yeah, I think so.
Love it. Yeah. Okay. Mike, thanks for sharing all that great information.
Sure.
That is good.
I want to invite you up to see me anytime you get a chance.
We'd love that. Thank you.
Great.
Careful what you ask for, Mike.
Yeah. We might show up on your doorstep.
I've seen it all.
I love it. Well, Mike, we go in. Brittany, why don't you explain the lightning round to Mike?
Yeah, I'd love to. So our lightning round's pretty lighthearted and fun. We're just going to ask you some rapid-fire questions, if you will. This or that, or maybe just small opinions about some of these questions we're asking you. So feel free to answer at length or just shoot from your hip and give us your best shot.
Well, give me the question. I've had them all.
Okay, I'm ready if you are. I gave away the first one. South Dakota or Minnesota for walleyes?
Is that a question?
Yeah. Pick one of the two.
One has 10,000 lakes and 5 fish, and the other one has 3 reservoirs and a lot of fish.
Okay, you answered that one.
We call that a very clear answer, folks.
I like that. That's a good one. Okay, artificial or live bait?
50-50.
Okay.
If you got to cover a lot of water, use artificial bait. If you're going to slow it down and fish structure, you go to live bait.
Excellent. So, Mike, before we go to the next one, I'm curious, this time of year, is trying to keep live bait alive when it's 100 degrees, is it worth, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is it worth it, or do you just switch to artificial?
No, live bait, you get rid of the minnows, though. Minnows are too hard to keep alive. Your bait fish are, but night crawlers, a little cooler, and just get a little frozen ice pack and throw on top of your bedding, and they'll put up with 105 degrees all day long.
Okay.
Okay, next question. Night crawlers or leeches?
Night crawlers are cheaper.
And just
that's the only difference to me.
Okay. Just as effective as leeches, then, I take it?
It doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
The night crawlers are a lot easier to take care of.
Yeah, exactly. Bait casting or spinning?
Both. I mean, if you're casting light things like small jigs and stuff, you have to have spinning. Mm-hmm. If you're using a bottom bouncer, it's bait casting.
Okay.
Drop her down and click the handle and you're ready.
Okay. Now this next question is kind of based on your guiding and everything. Quality or quantity? In other words, spending all day targeting a big fish or getting the people happy with catching a lot of medium-sized walleyes?
Well, if somebody's looking for a particular size of fish, like I want to catch one over 10, you'd probably do it a little bit different, but I sure wouldn't give him much chances of that happening, but he could do it and you could guide him to do that. But actually, Brent, those fish you catch are as big as the guide makes them. I mean, if you say, geez, the fish are little today, you're going to catch little fish all day.
Yeah.
But if the first fish in the boat is, that's a nice one, even though he's only a pound and a half, that's a nice fish.
Yeah.
So a guide can really set the tone for what's expected from his people.
You know? Well, that's good, Mike. That's really good. Because a lot of people who take a guided trip, they want to take home some meat. They want to take home some great fillets. And, you know, if you're saying, you know, 2-pound fish is a nice eating fish, I mean, and they're going to feel good about themselves, and they're going to also have some great fillets to go home with.
Absolutely. And there's very few places where, I mean, if somebody had to guide for big fish, I'd probably go to McConaughey in May.
Oh.
Year in and year out for 50 years, that has produced big fish every spring.
Mm.
But other than that, it's hit and miss. I mean, if you catch an 8-pound walleye, I don't care where you're at, you got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
If I go catch 8-pounders every day, I'd still be fishing tournaments.
Yeah, I hear you. Braid or monofilament?
Monofilament.
Monofilament. Interesting. Why so?
Absolutely. Well, it actually, for diameter size, it cuts water better than braid. Braid's kind of furry, and you get the same line diameter. Braid, a little more buoyant. But the good part about braid is there's no stretch. But now, that could be the enemy, too. Because how a fish eats is he don't bite anything. He gets so close, flares his gills, opens his mouth, and sucks that in with the water flow. If you don't have enough slack in that line, it can't go backwards. So braid takes a lot of that slack out on a jig. I mean, it's pretty straight. A lot of times you're going to get short hit on braid. So I just stick to the monofilament. Easier to tie, easier to deal with. You know.
Very good. Very good. Favorite type of fishing, deep or shallow? Now, I know before you answer that, I know that differs, like you explained to us, where the shad are going to be. But when conditions are ideal, where would you rather fish, shallow or deep?
If I'm just fishing by myself, I love to fish shallow. I love to cast. I love to fish jigs. That's what I'd like to do. But if you're guiding, that kind of sets how you're going to fish.
Okay.
What techniques you're going to use and so on and so forth. But no, if it was up to me, I'd cast jigs all day long everywhere.
Excellent.
Catch fish everywhere too. Maybe not the right ones. Maybe not the walleyes, but I'm going to catch fish.
Yeah, excellent. Last question. The early days or retirement?
Say that again.
You enjoying life and enjoying fishing. The early days, like when you and I hooked up, or your retirement days where you can just go fishing with your grandson and guide when you want to.
Well, I don't know. You can't never retire from fishing. But the early days was very exciting. We was developing new techniques, learning new stuff about the fisheries, about the fish and stuff, and geographically expanding the walleye fishing range. And that was pretty exciting. Now I pretty much got my fishing schedule set. I know where I'm going to be, what time of the year, and no big surprises like we had on some of our lakes that we had tournaments in, where fished a tournament there for 2 years, 3 days each year, and didn't have a bite.
Yep.
6 days on a body of water and you don't get a bite, or 12 days.
Oh.
I fished one in Muskegon, Wisconsin, off the Great Lakes there, and I fished it 2 years in a row. And on the 12th day, I had 2 bites. And I caught them both. They weighed about a pound and a half each.
Jeez.
Now,
well, that's
a bad place to go fishing.
I guess. You ever do you, in this day and age, you ever get skunked?
Oh yeah, I do. Okay. I can't remember when, but I know I do. Yeah, usually where I'm fishing where the fish are biting.
Okay.
If I stuck to one lake, I'd have some tough days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so skip to them and go somewhere they're biting is a lot easier.
Very good.
But I guess a takeaway from this episode, I think that the biggest takeaway is fish where the fish are and use a bait that the fish are going to eat, right? Use the right groceries. Does that make sense? And fish are going to be in the food.
Yeah. Locate your fish through communications. It's a lot easier to visit with somebody about it, about a particular area or lake than it is to go fishing. So communications, the right lake at the right time, it makes it pretty easy. And then you can pretty much catch them however you want to catch them.
That's a good word. Very good word. Well, for being a Jedi master of walleye, Mike, it's good to know that you sometimes get skunked. That's a good good thing for all of us to hear.
It is.
Mike, thank you for joining us today. How can folks connect with you? Do you have a website or where do you publish some of your content? Because I know we covered briefly some of that above in our podcast, but please share where we can find you.
You know, I don't really have a, I don't think, I do have a website. I just don't know what it is right now.
But you're too busy fishing, that's why.
But they can find me at mikemcclellan.com.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay.
Do you offer your books? You'd mentioned that you'd published several books there. Do you offer those books for sale on your website, or is that someplace they'd go to Amazon to find those?
You can find them at Amazon. There's only one of them still in print.
Okay.
And that's the best one. We've sold about 20,000 copies of that.
Wow.
So, what's the name of that, Mike?
That's Walleye Troubleshooting. It answers the 50 most often asked questions about walleye fishing.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely put a link to your website and to your book on Amazon. So if folks want to find that, they can find that from the episode here in the show notes.
Awesome. Guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors. We're excited to see you next time.
Well, I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed talking to you, Brent. And if you get back up here, get a hold of me. You're not too old to drive this far.
No, not yet. Not yet.
So it's something about a blind nut and a squirrel. I don't know.
Yeah. I might need somebody to drive me up there like driving Miss Hayes.
Well, thanks, guys.
Great, Mike.
All right.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you for having me.
See you guys.